Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Today, we are going to be doing some question and answers with Michael Schmidt here. I have back with me again. In the last episode, we were here to talk about mining and he explained Bitcoin mining to us. Today, we're here to talk about the upcoming Flag Day, as they call it. And it's coming up in August at block height 961,632. So that is coming up soon. And it's coming to my attention more that a lot of Bitcoiners don't understand what is at stake or what's really happening. We all have this idea of what node implementation we want to run, Bitcoin Core, Bitcoin Knots, what ethos we stand behind, but what happens next? That's what we're here to discuss. For those of you who have already heard about the node wars, it just very much feels like the polarization that's happening in the Bitcoin community reminds us so much of the political polarization we see in the world. And it's really hard and exhausting to watch happen in the Bitcoin community. And we're here to just take that middle ground and just ask questions and figure out what is really going on with this upcoming date. So thank you, Michael Schmidt, for joining me again today.
Of course, yes. Happy to be here. I did deliberate a long time if I want to do this, if I want to jump into discussion again. But I really feel that a lot of people have very good intentions mm-hmm. of what they're trying to achieve. Unfortunately, this is a very technical topic, and I think a lot of people are not aware of, even though that they have the best intentions for Bitcoin and for this network, for the future, for their kids and all that stuff, the problem is that they don't really technically really understand what's going to happen depending on possible outcomes. And I really see what I've seen in my local Bitcoin community just to try to be like a neutral, I am from Switzerland in the end, to be neutral and just explain technically. I really think everybody should take their own decision, and I don't judge if that decision is to run knots or not, and or to go whatever. I just want to make sure that the person that takes a decision, that they have enough information to take a well-informed decision. I think right now, specifically what happens is that we're only focusing on one little thing, and that causes people to make like a decision. And I want to make sure that people have all or like have as more knowledge than right now. And yeah, so I don't even want to really talk about my opinion. I'm happy to talk about opinion maybe at the end, but the idea is really to just make sure that people have the right amount of information to take decisions.
Right. And we all have our ideas about the ethos and what we stand behind for different reasons. But today is more about, again, taking that neutral stance, talking about the technical side of things, what really is about to happen and how, because a lot of us don't understand those who are not on the technical side. We look to somebody to trust who we think we could trust, who could tell us what's going to happen. And I think that I would like to ask you about some of the misconceptions, because like so many others, I myself was thinking that this is a soft fork situation. I want to run knots because I align with knots. You know, that's where I stood and, you know, and everything, until I started asking some more questions, because I kept hearing about this Bitcoin fork. And I thought, is that FUD? Is that something just to scare people out of running knots so that they don't run knots? But I think it has more to do with the BIP 110. And I want you to explain what that means, because people, I think we are under the assumption that you run the node you want and everything's fine, you know, but it feels to me like we're living through the block size wars 2.0, where we have this chain split happening and a lot of people don't realize that that's actually imminent or about to happen.
Correct. Yes. I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that even though we call it fork, right, soft fork or hard fork, it's actually a fork of the code we're talking about and not of the chain. Right? So I think that's very important. So if we say soft fork versus hard fork, what basically it has nothing to do if we will have two chains in the end or not. In both cases, a soft fork and a hard fork, you can have one chain or you can have two chains at the end. And I think that's really where we don't talk, or that's one of the major misconceptions, because in the end, I think we all would like not to have two chains. two chains, if we go a bit technical of what this could cause, it can cause all kind of issues. It will cause issues with money transfers, people that run Lightning nodes, exchanges. Like, it just causes this issue because there will be two chains, and for a period of time, that can be for a short amount of time, that can be for a longer days, weeks amount of time, if there are really two chains that continuously get blocks put on top, it could just cause all kind of issues. Like, you could lose money that you transfer around. I guess, and if you had a Lightning node, somebody could steal, your partner on the other side could steal your money. So it's a bad thing to happen, right? The whole Bitcoin network is made around that we try to only have one chain, and right, having two chains specifically for a very long time is bad.
Yeah, so this thing, having two chains, it becomes complicated, because even when they talk about the taproot and what happened back when, the ordinals was discovered that they could put inscriptions on chain, that all happened, which was an unforeseen consequence of taproot. And this is one of those ideas that it could be this unforeseen consequence of having those two chains, and we don't know what can come from that. So as far as the fork, yes, having two chains, you're meaning, have we never seen that before? We've never seen a chain split like that, like where it didn't, like you said before we got on, that when it happened with the block size wars, they chose to split off into their own chain.
Yes. So I think we need to understand two differences. There are sometimes situations where a group of people, they want to split away, right? Because they do not agree anymore with the decisions that were made in the main Bitcoin, if we can call it that, but like in the main fork. And that's why, for example, we have today Bitcoin Satoshi Vision, Diamond Bitcoin, and like all these other Bitcoin-ish things. And the people behind these chain splits, they wanted to move away because they felt that it's not correct anymore what the main Bitcoin is doing. So if you have that plan, it's perfectly fine to create a hard fork and split away, right? That's a completely standard. That's how Bitcoin was made. We haven't had many of these, right? And we never had, for a very long time, two chains that actually claimed they are Bitcoin. So these are the chains that happened before. They clearly wanted to move away and saying, we are something different. Like, they literally created another name in that case. What we have now with BIP110 is two things that I don't think ever happened before. First, it's described as a soft fork, and we can go into what the difference is. So it was not a hard fork, it's a soft fork. And two, they think that this new chain that will be generated should be Bitcoin. That chain should become the standard to Bitcoin. And they basically want to force everybody, the miners and the nodes, to jump onto that new chain. And that chain should be the Bitcoin as we know it. And the chain that currently is being created should die off.
And I think that's... saying that before they were with a clear purpose, this is supposed to be Bitcoin, so they forked off onto a different coin. But now it seems that they just want to split it in half and then bring everyone over to that half.
Exactly. Yes.
But it still technically seems like, instead of splitting off and calling it a different name like they did in the past, it's like, we just want to split it, but keep it here, but bring everyone to what we're doing. They just want to, it's like a rule change, right? BIP110 is a rule change that the purpose is to migrate everyone over to that new rule.
Correct. But what we also need to understand, right, there is a possibility to do a soft fork without creating a chain split. And that happens, as we had the previous soft fork activations, Segwit and Taproot. If you give enough people enough time to signal, I'm interested in this soft fork, and specifically the economical nodes and the miners, if you give them enough time and they all start signaling, hey, this is this, we like this soft fork, we will activate this. If you have enough, more than 80 to 90%, you will not have a chain split on that day, right? That's so really important to understand.
Do we not has there not been enough time given since when did this begin? Was it a year ago?
It was proposed like in October last year.
Okay, so it's coming up to a year ago. Is that not enough time?
In the times of Bitcoin, no, it is not enough time. And we see this, right? If you look in the past, well, there's two major differences. First, the time between proposing and activating, that's one thing. The other question is, how fast is the code actually available? And in BIP110 specifically, we only now, since May, beginning of May, have an actual full knots version that has BIP110 full support in it. Before there were like pull request versions or like forks of knots that had this, but like properly where the knots team says, we now feel comfortable that this is the BIP110. Literally right now in July, it only existed since 2 months. And so that's way too short for miners and economical nodes to really say, yes, we're going to use this, right? We need to understand these are businesses that make millions or billions of dollars with Bitcoin. For them to switch to a new version, this takes months of testing. They need to analyze the code and things like that. And then the other thing is, there is no real Bitcoin core with BIP110, right? Knots itself is already such a diversion of core because there's all kind of different changes in knots. So if I'm a miner and I want to use BIP110 and I currently use core, I not only need to accept or need to review the changes of BIP110, I also need to first switch over to knots altogether and then to BIP110 version of knots. And to give people 2 months for this is just way too short of time, right? This would usually take 6, 9, 12 months. And that's what we have seen in the past with SegWit and Taproot, where there was a long, long time. And the other difference is there was no forced day. Like in both times, it was in a way that we said, when the network will flag 80 to 90% around there, then it will activate. But there was no guaranteed day. And with BIP110, what they did is this flag day, now beginning of August, that said, even if the miners do not signal, right, it was 55%, even if not more than 55% of the miners signal, we're going to activate it anyway. And that's completely unprecedented. Or that's very much like a hard fork team would behave that want to move away. Like right. They're saying, we have enough, we will leave. But it's this like, no, we want a soft fork, but we haven't really built it in the way that we have done these things before.
So
the other thing
rushed?
To give them credit, I want to say though, like, we haven't had a lot of soft forks in the past. So there is not really a precedent really how to enable soft forks. Like there were very few. So there is some people argumenting, well, there is no standard for soft fork, so we cannot claim that this is wrong.
So technically, this could have waited a little longer to do it the right way.
Yes.
But it seems that the rush to do this is part of the problem. And I don't know, in my idea, I feel like because a lot of the people got it in their head once they released the information about the Bitcoin Core funding that was associated with the Epstein files and all that stuff, then it was like, oh my gosh, Bitcoin Core is now being, they are influencing changes in Bitcoin that we might not want these bad people to be influencing something that we care so deeply about. So that's where I think a lot of the anger and disconnect came from Bitcoin Core, because so many people were like, nope, I'm not standing with that. I'm going this way instead. So they literally, it's like you said, they want to change, but it's because I feel, again, this is just my speculation, it's not whatever, but I think a lot of the community just feels like, we don't want anything to do with Core. We're going to be over here. Now follow us. Like, it feels like that. So I feel like maybe it shouldn't have been rushed, but I think people just got so, just like, you know, we are angry with the fact about this that happened in the first place, and we wish more people got prosecuted for what happened with the Epstein files, and it hasn't happened yet. So there's just a lot, I think a lot of it stems maybe from there, and why the rush and why the severity of this happening in a way?
Yeah. Look, for me, when I'm looking at this, right, this is just one of the many pieces where I feel, and I agree with you there, that there's this idea to leverage some kind of momentum that is going on to cause people to make irrational decisions or decisions that they don't really have time to really analyze, give enough time to saying, okay, what do I really want? Right? It's like with these scam calls, when they call you and saying like, you need to decide right now. And I think it's that tactic to force people into deciding.
Right.
And it's, if you look into the history, yes, we have not had these really rushed activations and signaling periods. Usually that takes a lot longer.
Right. And we didn't like, on the not side, we didn't like how the core team went about changing what they wanted to change as far as allowing a bigger UTXO set. Is that what it was all about? And then to be able to allow more of these inscriptions so miners can make more profit off the fees and all that stuff. And that's what it was all about. But then, you're thinking, why, as a Bitcoiner and a node runner and a miner, if you're not incentive, like if you're not some part of some big mining farm, why do you care to create? It's a pretty much a big money making thing, and for more big mining companies to make more money. And that's why everybody was like, nope, we're against that. We don't care. But I just think that it went from what ideals you have to just becoming a rush. And I think, like you said, with the spam calls, like it happened to me yesterday. Like I was coming back from a trip and I had I got sucked into somebody trying to sell me something because they were being really nice. And of course I didn't fall for it in the end, but at first I was like, okay, they're nice, I'm gonna listen. But then it was like kind of that urgency again too, like, and I'm like, I almost was like, that is what made me feel uncomfortable. Yep. The urgency, it gave me like a dirty feeling. It made me feel nausea. And I was like, when you feel like that, that's like your intuition telling you. So even though we don't like some of the things, like why the core incentives, why did they choose this? Why did they push it on us in such a way where there wasn't a conversation? And then when you find out about the funding, you think, oh, is that why? Because someone's trying to influence it, because there's a reason for it. So then you move over. You're like, I want to do this. But then when you do this and you're forced, it's like, uh-huh. It all felt like, in a way, it was all too fast. And it was like, we need more time, I think, mainly. That's the thing. And then what is it with this 1 year? So there's a 1 year. What does that mean? Like, so if the soft fork happens, if there's a chain split, whatever, what does this all mean with the 1 year?
So that's another very interesting thing that never happened before in Bitcoin. So usually when we do a soft fork, right, there's some kind of change in the rules of Bitcoin. And when they activate, they are set and they will stay there forever, right? That's how we did SegWit. That's how we have Taproot. In this specific case with BIP1 on 10, they're proposing 7 changes that will make it harder for some people to inject, inscribe, however you want to call it, arbitrary data into the Bitcoin blockchain. However, these changes are only enforced for exactly 1 year. Mm-hmm. Now, again, this is something new that we have never seen. And I can make 2 arguments why this happens. One, that's what they're saying, is that we're not sure if these 7 rule changes are the right ones. So we kind of want to try them, right? So we do them for 1 year. For 1 year, we see how much pain it generates. And then after 1 year, we can decide, are we going to keep them? Should we expand them? Were they completely wrong? Kind of stuff. So this, it's from an engineering point of view, it's kind of an interesting idea to say, we never really know if the things that we want to do are really having the right consequences. So let's do them for one specific time. Again, this is something that we have never done. And so it can also be seen as this, like, well, so you rushed this, right? Usually in Bitcoin, when we decide something, we let a lot of time happen for a lot of people to do tests, to activate it on testnet, to have signets, right? To do testing, people looking at it. And then over months or years of debate, we come to a conclusion and saying, yes, this is what we do. We think this is the best way. This is the same again
because
for SegWit.
Because there's a consensus at some point there.
Correct. Yes. This is a completely new way that we're saying, oh, we're just going to try some things on Bitcoin mainnet. And again, if you look back into the last 15 years, this was not done that way.
And that makes you feel uneasy because the way Bitcoin works is proof of work over time, not rushed, block by block, every 10 minutes. Everything is like clockwork, not rushed. It's
correct.
Not sped up. Yep. Nothing is sped up. So the fact that this feels like, as a Bitcoiner, just it feels right ethically, but
correct.
The speed, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, correct. The other argument that some people are saying is, well, this is another one of these, like, it gets unknowingly people into it, right? That they can say, or maybe one of 10 people can say, oh, it's just for a year, don't worry. So that's another thing, right? Like, if you think about the car salesman or a spam call, right? It's just a trial. Don't worry, you have a 30-day back guarantee, like these type of things. And then when you're stuck with it, the work to actually undo it is so hard. That then maybe the argument in 9 months down the road is saying, well, we have lived with it now, we can't change it, right? Because again, there's no precedence of this.
Right.
How would we go back?
So that's why the 1 year thing could just be a way to get everyone over to that side, try it out, but then you can't get out of it, like a timeshare.
Yeah. And so for me, right, that's the, I'm not judging which of the two it is. I'm looking at it from an engineering point of view. I can see both sides of like, and
it might not be a bad thing, like we said, but because of the miner signaling and because of the node participation and the way that people feel, if it were to go the way Bitcoin goes at a slower pace and the way that Bitcoin's done things before, maybe we wouldn't have had this type of situation. And again, maybe it would be great. Maybe it goes back to revert. See, that's the thing. I think I've heard people say that it reverts Bitcoin back to prior to the Tapper, prior to inscriptions. It's like all that stuff. But then you hear that inscriptions developers, all these people are finding loopholes to make the data smaller to be able to put it in the blocks anyway. So then what's the point? Because it's still happening. And also, we still align with the censorship resistant part of Bitcoin. So we like that it's not censored and open, even though we don't want bad things to be on Bitcoin and we don't like everything that's on Bitcoin, but we also don't like everything that's on the internet, but it's open to everybody. So there's arguments on both sides. We're not going to stop everything in the world that we don't love.
Yeah.
But it still can be Bitcoin as money. I think people think like now maybe the idea of now it's going to have inscriptions, now it's not money anymore. Is that because people have this idea that now tell me if I'm wrong. My idea was that with Core and this UTXO set, it would be that it would squeeze out small miners and it would be centralized mining. And a lot of people hated that. A lot of people were like, nope, I want everyone to mine and run a node. We want to have a lot of nodes because nodes make the network. And it can't be just these big mining companies and farms that decide what happens with Bitcoin. We need more nodes. We need more. It needs to be decentralized. So that was my big argument. So am I wrong? And a lot of people that think that way.
Yeah, I think we need to dissect this a little bit, right? So the first thing we need to understand is that today there is this field in a Bitcoin transaction called upreturn that is described as a place where if you have to put in any arbitrary data into a transaction, please put it in there. It was developed because some people call them spammers, other people just call them people, like people that put in, they basically used fake UTXOs, so fake addresses, to put data into Bitcoin. The problem is, as a Bitcoin node that needs to transact or like handle all these transactions, there is no way for me to know if this is a fake address or not. So I will store them on my node because there's no way for me to know. UpReturn was developed to saying, okay, if you all want to put data in, we'll give you a field that clearly is like this place to put in arbitrary data. So I, as a node that runs a node, I can just not store this. That's what OpenReturn was. The problem is that we have two things, right? So we have Bitcoin policy and also consensus. And the thing we need to understand is just because a transaction is not relayed over the mempool, right? If I send a transaction to a mempool or to a node, that node will decide if it relays the transaction to another node. That's how within the Bitcoin network, a transaction goes through all the different mempools to then eventually be added to a block. It prevents you to directly going to a miner, right? Otherwise, if you wouldn't have the mempool, you would need to send your transaction to all the miners. And because this is decentralized, right? Bitcoin came up with this idea, let's create this mempool that you just add your transaction to one node, that node sends it to everybody else, that node sends it to everybody else, eventually it will end up with the miners. That makes a decentralized network. And so that is what is called policy. So now Bitcoin Core had a policy of, I think, 80 bytes-ish. So this space, this OpReturn data space, was 80 bytes. So if you wanted to send something that was bigger than 80 bytes, if you sent it to a regular node, that node rejected it and your transaction was never sent around. However, we also not only have policy rules, we have also consensus rules. And consensus is what is actually valid in a block. And interestingly, about OpReturn, there is no upper limit of what is valid in a block. So if you want to make a transaction that is bigger than 81, than 80 bytes, you can just directly go to a miner and say, hey, miner, here is a transaction with 200, 300, 3,000, 10,000 to put that return or to put that data in it. Now, the miner can take this and can add it to the block, can transmit it. And so that was a way that people were able to send transactions with more data in it than this 80 bytes. And that's what was called, for example, there was a product called Marathon, had a product called Slipstream. It was a website. You sent your transaction in there. You paid some money, I think with Lightning. And then Marathon, whenever they created their next block, they added this. And this is how, for example, you could do like happy birthday messages and things like that. Like, there's many people that use this to like inscribe data into OpReturn. The problem is, and that's where we're, so there was a bit of a long explanation to get there. The problem is, in order to profit from that, right? Because that's what usually these transactions with this a lot of data in it, they had higher fees. In order to profit from that, as a miner, I had to create this slipstream system. And to run all of this, right? This is another website with Lightning nodes and things like that, Lightning like payments and all this stuff. This was only really possible for the big miners to do. As a small solo miner, like, nobody would come to my website and upload their transaction. So this is where you're saying, but it was bad, or it was forcing only to do the big miners. That was one of the arguments that was used, is to make sure, because, right, we want to make sure that if the big miners can profit from these bigger OpReturns, as a Bitcoin network, we want to make sure that everybody can profit. And so Bitcoin Core changed the policy, the relay policy of this mempool from 80 to 10,000. Because they said, if we do this, then also the small miners can profit from these high transaction fees, transaction with this data in it. So that was one of the discussion why we said.
So when did they do that? They did that prior to knots becoming more, when did they do that? Because were they trying to do that as a response to the community backlashing, or was that done first and then the community said, why is Core trying to make it have more space? Like, you know what I mean? Because I think that sounds like that would help the whole centralized mining situation, because I think people's fear was if you pay to play, right, then if people have small unspent transactions, UTXOs, for people that don't understand, if you have smaller amounts on the main chain of Bitcoin and you try to send it, it'll get stuck there forever because you can't send that out if it costs so much to send a little amount. So then there would be a lot of unspent transactions that are just frozen in the Bitcoin main chain. So then by doing this, by updating it so that it would be 10,000 from 80, you're saying that even the small miners would be, it wouldn't pretty much bottleneck everything.
Correct. Yes. So, and I think that's the crux of the situation. So this happened. It was merged into Bitcoin Core in June 2025. This change, by the way, it was from 83 to 100,000 bytes. Doesn't matter if 80 or 10, but it was increased by a lot. And the reason that it was merged in, it wasn't really explained well. And that's usually how things happen, right? Yeah. If somebody does something without a proper explanation, people start to take assumptions. And when this pull request came up, it was proposed, but again, it was a bad job done by the core maintainers to explain why this has been done. And then people correctly freaked out because there was no good explanation. People assumed, and that's where obviously some people went to the roundabout, oh, core wants more spam in the chain. Right? If you make the space for people to put in bigger and easier to use, by default, people will say, oh, you're happy with this. You're encouraging them to bring in more.
Right.
While the answer of Core was, or the reason for Core was, is just saying, no, we have this weird issue where consensus allows these big transactions, but policy does not. We believe we need to adapt policy to consensus because there is a way anyway to get these transactions in it.
So really you're trying to create consensus among policy and consensus. You're trying
something
to
like that. Yes. Yeah.
Like you're trying to coherence between the two. Policy and consensus. But see, that's the thing. When I heard about that happening specifically, about raising that limit, I thought, why would they want to do this? So they can make more money for miners. And I think a lot of people thought like me, they were like, oh, that's horrible. They want to make more money. And since I'm not a technologist, I just listened to, then I started hearing about the narratives and the ETH, like who's behind the funding and the incentive behind it. And why are they doing this? And I think that, yes, it wasn't explained very well because my mind directly went to, that means wrongly informed. And I'm okay to admit that I was wrong and I wasn't well informed. I just thought that meant that they want to centralize the fees for the big miners so that smaller miners can be squeezed out and then mining and nodes and all that stuff it'll centralize Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But really what was going to centralize Bitcoin was the fact that we had this incoherence between policy and consensus. And that was allowing miners to make more profit and squeeze out the little guys.
Yeah.
So this coherence between the two was supposed to allow for that not to happen, but people freaked the F out.
Correct. And then, unfortunately, right, people freaked out. There was discussion where then people said, hey, why is this proposed? Then was this whole discussion on GitHub, where usually we don't have these type of discussions. There's just technical reviews. People got banned on GitHub because they did not follow. Core said, hey, this is not the place to talk about this. Please go over there. They continue talking about it, right? And so there was just like this snowball of just the community basically making one mistake after the other. And specifically Core, like I told you, like they made a lot of mistakes during that time. They did not handle it very well. And then it got merged in June and then released in October. And that by itself also felt like we're not actually having the discussion. And this typical...
Instead of cleaning up their messaging, it was like they resorted to kind of a defense mode.
Yeah.
Like it was turned on to, instead of just cleaning up the messaging, saying the same thing, everyone being like, hey, this is what we failed to inform you guys of, and making sure that message was clear. It was more like individual people and, you know, Bitcoin Twitter, and everybody's like, you're stupid. No, you're stupid. Yeah. No, like, I'm a technologist. You're dumb. You don't know anything. Listen to me. But it's like, that wasn't the right thing to do.
Correct.
I'm not a technologist, and I understand this when someone breaks it down for me.
Yeah.
You know, we're not stupid because we believe in one thing or the other. We do understand if we're spoken to normally, and that's what we're looking for, and that's what we're aiming to do here today. And people deserve that. You know, the Bitcoiners deserve that. We don't need this arguing and this fighting. We don't need the polarization. The messaging was wrong. The speed at which this was done was very fast. And I love that you are connecting all these dots for me. And I'm sure that, you know, whenever you feel like you're the only one, you're not. There's so many people like you out there that believe the same thing you do, you know, because again, I was not that, and it's not that I think either side is doing anything wrong, right? We're all Bitcoiners. We want to do what's right. But if the whole idea is what was Core's incentive, that's like the wrong starting point, right?
Yep. And look, it's kind of funny, right? Like I work in software engineering. I work with a lot of software engineers, and communication is not our strong suit. Like, that's just the case, right? If you spend a lot of time talking to a computer where there is no ambiguity and anything at all, you become standardized, or like, you think you can argue with this computer thing all the time, right? There's no, like, in programming, there is no different ways how to understand something. Programming languages are very, very, very clear what they mean, right? If you forget the semicolon, it's gonna, and this programming language requires a semicolon, it will fail. If you write a regular English sentence and you forget the dot at the end, nobody cares, because humans are able to infer and understand what this means. And so, right, if you are a software engineer that lives this whole time and works with these systems that are very, very strict, and then suddenly you talk to other humans, that's very hard. And a lot of times, if you go back to the discussion with around like this whole up return change, these people argued, well, like just look at the code, right? That's like a lot of times what engineers are saying is like, can't you just read the code to understand what it means, right? But no, that's you're correctly saying, no, many people cannot read code.
Yes.
And you need to be able to, a lot of times in programming, right, you make one change, like in my world where we do a lot of, I review a lot of code and stuff like that. Sometimes you have one single line of code change, but thousands of lines of explanation of why, what have you thought about, what have you decided, and things like that. And I think that part was just done really bad, unfortunately, and then also doubled down. I think that's then on top of
this. Maybe because Core was so used to being able to make these little one-line changes and make little adjustments that way all this time, but because it aligned with the news of the Epstein files and the funding came out, then it was like, they made a change, let's freak out. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? So it's almost like the narrative, maybe that was the purpose of the news coming out, to be like,
who knows?
I don't know. But the thing is, yes, it caused this big rift. And for what? Maybe these were things that always happened that nobody had a fit about. But again, if we wanted to create these rule changes, now the thing is, so whatever BIP 110 is doing, if I hadn't known up until recently that there's loopholes already for the censorship that they were trying to stop, what's the point?
And that's one of the major arguments I think that is very hard to discuss about. It's like, should we, as a community, as a Bitcoin community, should we actively add roadblocks to these people that want to use Bitcoin in a way that some people don't agree, right? If you're using the word spam, and I think it's easier to use the word spam, but I think the people that are using it, they're not calling it spam, right? They're calling it inscriptions, and they love to have their JPEGs inscribed for forever in the Bitcoin blockchain. They would not call it spam, but whatever, like, it's data that is in a monetary system that is not of monetary value.
Well, if you think of it, like, also, explaining it that way, it makes you think of how so many people have the argument of what Satoshi initially put on the Genesis block. You know, that was an inscription right off the bat. And then they're like, oh, so you're saying Satoshi, you know what is a spammer and he put spam on the blockchain. You know, and it was like, it was able to be done. It was done. And if more people do it, I mean, we think of Bitcoin as this new version of a clock, a new way of telling time, a new way to keep record of all the transactions that happen. So if you can keep record along with a note, is that terrible? Like, what if more people wanted to be like, hey, this was, you know, Bitcoin's 20th year anniversary. I want to say I sent this much money to my, I don't know, whoever, you know, for the 20th year anniversary and have that inscribed on the block. Yep. Just as like a history book, like a little people writing their name on a wall or something. Like, is that terrible? I know that there's some bad stuff, but then people try to scare you by saying, oh, then all of a sudden Bitcoin can be attacked because there's some bad stuff on there that they shouldn't have. Yeah, it's wrong and some stuff is not right. And there's some stuff on the internet that's not right. But because I heard from a good friend of mine in the Bitcoin army, who is amazing, his name's OG Bringfax, but he made a great point. He said, you know, people use the internet all the time.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of bad stuff on the internet, but we're not being attacked for being on the internet and using that protocol.
Yeah. Correct.
So it's like,
and I think that's what the question comes back, right? Should we actively as a community try to put in roadblocks and make it harder and harder or add new ways to prevent it? When we know that these so-called spammers will always find a way, right? There is Bitcoin, the fact that it's a decentralized network with public-private keys, you will always be able to put in data into these public-private keys in some way. And the only way to stop it is to basically stop Bitcoin altogether. Like, that's a technical fact. Yes, it will be very expensive, and yes, it might be harder in some ways, but the spammers will always find a way to put it in. Now, some people say, well, the harder we make it, the less likely they do it, and also the more likely they will use some other chain, right? Because there are all the shitcoins out there that could also be used. And that isn't a good argument. I think that's a valid argument. But the question is, and this specifically with BIP-110, how much do we accept ourselves, like as the people that actively want to use Bitcoin as monetary transaction systems, how much do we want these people to be prevented? And that's where in my problem with BIP-110 comes in is it is possible that some transactions that are of monetary value are no longer possible with BIP-110, like with the 7 rule changes. And it's also possible that people will actively lose money or will not get access to their money anymore because of these changes.
And like for legacy wallets and stuff?
Say again?
Like legacy wallets?
Legacy wallets, like there's some Taproot leaves, there is some miniscript features because some of the if statements are no longer valid. And so there's all kind of things where people used Bitcoin as monetary value, right? To make sure that their Bitcoin, for example, can only be sent in a couple of months later, right? That's what Miniscript is about, that you can actually like configure your money. And some of these things will not work anymore in BIP-110. And for me, when I'm looking at this, I'm all for getting rid of spam if we can, in a way that does not harm the rest of the network, that does not harm the people that want to actually use it correctly. And for me, my personal opinion, when I'm looking at BIP-110 and all these changes, there is a risk that these changes will affect honest people that want to use it for monetary value. And that, for me, then goes too wide, or too far, that I'm saying, look, I rather accept that these spammers are here, that they will use it, and instead of making a change that could possibly harm other people that want to use it correctly. And connected to the fact that we have seen this in the past, block space is limited, right? So there is a maximum amount of transaction and space that you can put into block. And we have a fight around, or the way to get in is to pay money. I believe, this is not the case right now, but I believe in the future, Bitcoin block space is going to be so on demand that people will pay thousands, 10,000, 100,000, even millions of dollars to make one single transaction into that Bitcoin block. Now, again, this is not the case today. It's the cheapest than ever. But in the future, will that be the case? And then the question is that these spammers will probably saying, well, it was worth to inscribe my JPEG when it cost me 10 cents, which is today. But as soon as I have to pay $1,000, $10,000 or $1 million, and my JPEG is actually worth whatever, like a lot less, these people will stop, right? Why would you transfer a painting that costs $500 and to sell it and transport it, it costs $10,000? You wouldn't sell it. You'd rather just keep it. Sure. And so that's the same. Now, again, nobody can guarantee that that's the case, but that's my belief. I believe in the future, the fact that block space is limited, the fact there is a cost to be in block space, this thing will resolve itself. We have seen this many, many, many times. Like a lot of systems in the world, it's called game theory. That's why the your plane seats have different values, right? Because it's a limited space and people are kind of bidding for this. That's why auctions exist. It's a bidding war. It's a game theory. And for me, at least, I think we don't need to worry about all of this. We don't need to change rules that we're not really sure. All we have to do is just wait. This problem will solve itself completely by itself without doing anything.
And that's why when you say it like that, that's why like we all appreciate Satoshi for what he built and what he's done. And we know that he wasn't the best coder or technologist, as far as people say, but he understood game theory and he understood patience. And it seems like a very patient person, whoever he was, who was like, hey, I'm going to do this and just walk away. And I'm not like greedy or impatient, but he was able to create the system, put it out there, know that Bitcoin's a good hands, I'm going to walk away. And the idea of you thinking it's going to resolve itself, I think Satoshi believed that too. And that's why he wasn't so worried about it. Because I think what he built was more than just the code. It was the game theory behind all of it. And whatever governance issues arise and people argue and this and that, it's like, we just have to go back to the basics and slow things down, do things the way we always did, not be fooled by social engineering and, you know, like fear, like the same thing we always talk about, FUD, but there's FUD within right now. And the messaging needs to clean up. You know, there needs to be, again, like you said, you know, the technologists, they do the things probably they've always done. They probably didn't do anything different this time.
Yeah.
But they just did it at a time where some news came out.
Correct. And that's a lot of times, right? That's a lot of times how things go viral or anything that suddenly catches on is things have always been the same, but there's just these confluence of events happening that then suddenly makes the single wave a lot bigger. And I think that's what exactly happened there. And I think, I mean, having actually talked to some people in the Bitcoin core space, I think they learned a lot, right? They learned a lot that we need to do a better job. And I really hope that for all the people out there that are really like strongly behind BIP 1010 and things like that, that there will be a good resolution of this as well. Unfortunately, how I see it today, like if you go to Twitter and just enter BIP 1010, there's a lot of shouting, a lot of fear mongering, like you're correctly saying. And that makes me very sad because I think in the end,
putting people down, you know, name calling, making them feel like, you know, even me asking a simple question on Twitter is what you responded to, you know, and some of the answers I received, I was like, wow, I'm honestly just being serious. I just want to ask a question. And it was just, I can't take offense to it. I guess there's been so much heat in this discussion and topic, but I'm like, I really genuinely want to know what is about to happen in August.
Yes.
What are we expecting? And from what it sounds like, there's one side, the core side, who believes chain split is imminent. It's about to happen. But then on the not side, it seems like there's zero fear whatsoever. And I'm like, I can't be that person who completely trusts that there will be zero chance of that happening when one entire other side thinks for sure it will happen. So how is it that we have 100%? How is it that polarized that some people believe fully and some people are completely against? So I think that's the main point of this is like, first of all, we got to the reason behind it, but then how can we verify the mining signaling, the node signaling? Some people say it's all about the nodes. Miners don't matter.
Yep.
How do we know what's going to happen? Yep. How can we verify for ourselves what's about to happen?
Let's get into this. So I think the difference is we only know what is true today. On the 8th of July, that's when we know what is true. What would happen if we activate today? The problem is, and we can now make assumptions of what's going to happen in pretty much 1 month based on the information we have today. And I think the big discrepancy is most people are looking at today. They assume nothing materially changes until the 8th of August. So therefore, what would happen today will also happen then. BIP 1010 people, and specifically Luke, believes there will be something massively changing from now to August, and that will change everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, right, the discussions that we're having, you cannot even have a discussion because we have fundamentally different understandings of what's going to happen on until then. So let's get into it. If today the activation would happen right now, the BIP 1010 nodes, so that's nodes with either the newest version or a previous version with a specific patch applied. So these are called BIP 1010 nodes.
And where are you looking up this info if people wanted to follow this along themselves up until that date?
Yes, so I will send you some of the links afterwards, but there's a couple of websites that basically show you about signaling of the miners and also of the nodes.
Okay.
One of the sites is by Wicked Smart Bitcoin. He has a really good site that shows you how many blocks signal BIP 1010. But so if we would activate today, the BIP 1010 nodes would refuse any block that does not signal BIP 1010. So what's happening right now is miners, when they mine a block, they can say, do we like BIP 1010 or not? And it's a version flag that they can set. It's a 1 or a 0. If a 0, they say it's by default or it's standard. If they add a 1 in there, they're signaling BIP 1010. Today, we have 0.5% of all blocks in the last couple of days that have this in it. So we roughly have one block a day that signals this.
From the mining side.
From the mining side, correct. And so the BIP 1010 nodes, they will basically, of all the blocks created in a day, which is around 144 a day, they would basically ignore all blocks except one of them. And so let's say we are activated right now. Let's assume we are on a block 9,000 to make it easy. Right? The regular chain will continue to produce 9,001, 9,002, 9,003, and 9,004. All of them are not BIP 1010 nodes because no miner or very, very few miners are creating these blocks. And over one day, basically, the BIP 1010 nodes will have one single block that will be generated. And that basically means that's the chain split, right? The regular chain continues to create blocks every 10 minutes. So after one day, the regular Bitcoin chain will be 144 blocks ahead. And the BIP 1010 chain will be literally have mained one block only. And that's what would happen if this happens right now. So we have a block, a chain split, but the miners that have been mining on that block, they would basically be forced to switch over back to the regular chain because nobody will look at this chain, right? It's an orphan chain because there's not enough blocks to actually be the longest chain. My assumption would be that these miners that maybe said at the beginning, yeah, we're going to do it, and then they realize after a couple of hours or a couple of days that their chain is completely orphaned. Nobody uses it. they will basically change. They will install Core again or an older version of Knots and basically switch back to the other chain. So that's what would probably happen if the activation happens today.
So I think that's why that 1 year time frame that he's giving is thinking that, hey, eventually people will switch over if I give more time to do this change. Correct. Instead of saying it's now or never. So you have time to switch. But like you said before, too, that we don't know, because it's never been done before, how easy it would be to undo it.
Correct.
We don't know. Like, we don't, we haven't tested it. We don't know.
Correct. There is, however, we now need to bring the nodes in, right? Right now, we only talked about the miners. So while the nodes cannot enforce or cannot activate such a chain, right? Because the miners in the end are the ones that are producing the blocks and they decide which transactions go in or not. So the miners are in control of creating the blocks. The nodes are in control of distributing the blocks. Now, if a majority of the nodes, and we need to differentiate that they're actually different types of nodes, but let's just say if 80 or 90% of the nodes would run BAPE 1 or 10, and the miners, even though right there's only 1% of the BAPE 1 or 10 nodes being generated, because there's such a big amount of nodes that would saying we don't like these blocks that are not signaling BAPE 1 or 10, it makes very little sense for the miners to create these blocks. Because right, there's very little nodes that would actually distribute them. Because the Bitcoin miners, they're dependent on the network transferring them. So if a miner finds a block, they're only sending it to maybe 5 or 6 nodes. And they depend on these 5 or 6 to forward it. If the whole network says, or the majority of the network says, we don't like this block, why would the miner try to make this? So if, and that's where we're talking about, the nodes can force the miners to do something. But that only works if the nodes have a majority that are requesting or signaling this BAPE 1 or 10.
So you have also the link or the website to check on the node status on how many are signaling?
Correct. Right now, we have around 10% of the nodes are signaling BAPE 1 or 10.
Okay.
So, right. So if we would activate today, 90% of the nodes would continuously distribute these regular Bitcoin blocks that are produced by 99.5% of the miners. They would continuously distribute them and send them around. And the 10% of BAPE 1 or 10 nodes, they would basically see all these blocks that are coming in from 99.5% of the miners. They're saying, nope, I don't like that. And they will wait until the 0.5% of the miners find, the BAPE 1 or 10 miners find a block, and they will start to distribute them. So they will basically create this little chain that sits over there, that 10% of the nodes will suddenly basically see one block a day that they like. And they will basically sit over there and create their own little garden and saying, yay, like we're happy. The problem is, right, it's only 10% of the nodes, it's only 0.5% of all the miners, and that's what we call an orphaned chain, where it's a Bitcoin valid, it's all working, but nobody will be able to use this.
So that chain would remain split for the year, and whoever wants to stay on that little, if it's a 10% by that date, if it stays the same, let's say.
Correct. So the only way for any node to go back to the original or to... So if you don't do anything, you will basically stay on that chain. If there is a miner that mines and finds a block, great. But most probably all the miners will switch over and they will say, hey, okay, it was a nice try. I maybe tried to mine for 1 day, but not enough blocks, so I will switch over. So if you don't change your node, you will be with a chain that will never see a block. And the problem is, right, people sometimes saying, but the difficulty adjustment. The difficulty adjustment only happens after a specific amount of blocks and not actually about the specific amount of time. So this chain will probably never have enough blocks to actually adjust the difficulty. So this chain, if activated today, again, this is the big banner on top of everything I'm saying right now, would just fork off, create its own chain, maybe find one or two blocks. The miners will all say, okay, this was nice, I will go over to the chain. And these 10% of the nodes, or 10% of these nodes, they will see these maybe two blocks, and that's it. They will never, ever see a block again.
Interesting, because I thought that maybe because it's not split already into a different other, complete different coin, I was thinking the difficulty adjustment would be combined, but then that would make it still harder for the side that doesn't have as much computing power to even find a block.
Correct. Now, we need to add one more thing there. I've said now 90% of the nodes. That's not fully correct. The difference is that we have regular nodes and economical nodes. And these are nodes that actually do a big part of the transactions. So these are exchanges, merchants, big companies that do a lot of transactions, right? Because in the end, if you have your own node and your node is rejecting blocks, but it actually never gets transactions, right? It never receives a brand new transaction that then needs to be relayed, or it never needs to verify if a transaction that is sent over is correct, which happens of these economical nodes. So the merchants and the exchanges, their nodes come all the time, right? They receive transactions, need to validate them, they make to make sure. So these nodes, they're very, 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 very active. And they have a big impact, because if they're down or do something different, then they will have a big impact. And that's unfortunately how Bitcoin works, right? So if you run a node locally, that's nice, that's great. However, unfortunately, that node has a little bit less to say than, let's say, the node of Coinbase or the node of, let's say, MicroStrategy or BlackRock. And that's, now we can argue that this is bad, but that's what it is, right? This is just how it is today. And so in the end, it doesn't actually matter if it's 90% or 80%. Of all nodes, it matters the percentage of all these economical nodes. And that's, for example, what we saw during SegWit, where the miners did not want to...
Economical nodes, like let's say from Coinbase or BlackRock, are those meaning that they have a swarm of nodes that are all connected to one mining farm or something?
They probably have a group of nodes, yes. When we talk about economical nodes, we look at them as one node. They technically probably have multiple ones, right? But whatever version that Coinbase runs has a lot of impact on the community. And so, yes, that's what happened during SegWit. So during SegWit, the miners actually did not want to activate. But some very big economical nodes said, I want SegWit. And so even though SegWit did not initially have a high percentage of all the nodes, some very big important node said, I want SegWit. And that forced the miners then to switch over, because right, if the miners would continuously have not signaled, they would have lost their revenue from an exchange. And what does a miner do? A miner mines Bitcoin and they need to buy electricity. Electricity is usually bought in dollars, not in Bitcoin yet. So they depend on the exchanges to actually convert their Bitcoin back into dollars. And so if all the exchanges saying, I'm not gonna accept these blocks, miners, that you mined, oh, you wanna change your Bitcoin into dollars? Not with my exchange. And so then the Bitcoin miners suddenly like, I will lose my revenue, right? Like, how do I convert this thing, this Bitcoin, back into dollars to pay my electricity? And so these economical nodes were able to convince the miners, hey, you need to do this.
At what point did they decide to change their mind? Do you remember?
During the SegWit?
Yeah. Like how...
Well, that's an interesting thing, right? The question was, why are the miners reluctant to do this? And this is a bit of history. The reason actually was that Bitmain had found a way, it was called ASIC Boost, to actually mine better than everybody else. And with the adoption enabling of SegWit, they would have lost that advantage. They didn't tell anybody, but they knew if we would signal for SegWit, they would lose their advantages over all the other ones. That's why they said, no, we're not enabling this, right? Because why would I? Now, some people called it a hack. Some people called it cheating. Doesn't really matter. They had an advantage over all the other miners. And so that was one of the reasons that the miners said, no, we don't want this. But the nodes, and specifically economical nodes, were able to put pressure on them and saying, hey, even if you have all this advantage, which at that point nobody knew, this came out later, but we want this to do. And so the miners were like, okay. And so, right, and so now bringing this back to today, that also hasn't happened yet. There has not been many of these big nodes saying, hey, we want BIP 110. Yeah. Actually, to the other side, there were some big, I don't have a list right now, but you will find them, where people said, like, I will not, as an economical node, we will not run BIP 110 because we think that this is, for whatever reason, it doesn't matter. They came out and said, we will not run this. Uh-huh. So this is where we are today. Now, let's go into what could happen in until August. Now, what could happen? Yes. If suddenly a lot of miners, very big miners, come out and saying, we are in support of this, right? This would generate a bit of a FOMO event where the miners, right? Every miner has to decide on that 8th of August, on the flag day, which chain do I mine? And if I mine the wrong chain, I could lose money. Like, I could literally, it could happen. Let's say if it's 50-50, 50% mine to one to BIP 110 and 50% mine to the other one, all the miners that mine to the wrong one, whichever is wrong, they will lose all the block rewards. So all the three Bitcoin that they did, they will lose all of it. And so that's something that could happen. Now, what actually is interesting, just today, Ocean announced that they will change their default pool. So if you mine with Ocean, you will signal for BIP 110, which is a very interesting thing. So, right? So they basically force all their miners that send transactions to the pool, not via Datum, for all the people that are listening to this, it's just a regular pool. They will switch, I think, in a week to BIP 110. They did announce that they have a way to signal to Ocean, hey, I don't want to do BIP 110. But the default will suddenly change. And that could be one of the ways, again, I'm now speculating here, that they could try to create this FOMO. Interestingly, though, Ocean only has around 1% of the hash rate. So, or I think it's two, like it's a very minority of all of that. So, but that could happen. If one of the really big miners comes out and says, hey, I'm going to do this, that could create FOMO with the miners. Most miners will signal BIP 110. BIP 110 suddenly gets a massive amount of support by the miners. And in the end, it's the miners that can enforce, right? Because if 100% of the miners start to signal BIP 110, the regular nodes, they will accept it. Because in the regular world, a regular node, a BIP 110 block is still valid. That's what makes it a soft fork. So yeah, all the miners will switch over. Happy days, BIP 110 is the active chain. Nobody mines the regular chain anymore. Done. And it would happen like no chain split, nothing at all. And I think that's one of the possible possible things that could happen in the next month.
And we can monitor that on those links in the website. Correct. To monitor the network so we can see how it's looking, just because we want to be informed and we're part of it and we want to see what's going on. Correct. So we don't just have to hear from other people. But also those other changes, there, you said there's seven of them.
Yes.
So I'm not familiar with all of the changes of BIP 110. So is it...
You want to go into all of them?
I don't think
we have to go into all of them, but basically what they did, what the BIP 110 team did, they looked at all the different ways how inscriptions and ordinals and what they call spammers have used Bitcoin in the past to inscribe data into the blockchain. And they looked at all these different places, right? There's just not one of them. Even though UpReturn is actually the preferred, we're saying, hey, please put it there. People find other ways to inscribe, to put it in there for all kinds of reasons. Some of them, it makes technically more sense. Others, it's hidden more. Third one, it's cheaper, right? It costs less fees, whatever. So they looked at all these different places and they basically tried to find ways how to prevent this And that's why it is seven. So there's not just one change. It's surgical changes in seven different places in Bitcoin to make it harder to inscribe data in it.
Right. So, and then this is one last question that if you want to answer it, it's up to you. But like, I think Luke is smart. I think he has good ethics. I also think that some people think he's a little extreme. I don't know the entire full story about what happened where he was the lead developer in Core for so many years. And he did so much for Bitcoin for so long. And then it was like kind of like they turned on him. So I don't know what the deal is with that. I kind of hate that happened. I don't really know the full story, but also it could feel like a little bit of a personal thing.
Yeah, I mean, right, we need to understand how Luke by himself as the CEO of Ocean and the producer of Knots or the creator of Knots, there's a lot of connections in between there. And we've seen this in the past, right, with presidents and all kind of stuff. Sometimes people do decisions that they think are the right ones. They realize at one point that their decision was wrong. And instead of saying, hey, this was an attempt, it didn't work, and I stand behind it, let's not cause all this pain, they're just going to double down. And I think in Luke's situation right now, I think he's not doubling down, he's not tripling down, he's like 100 times downing. Like, it's just very, very, very angry, 24/7, spewing really like misinformation on Twitter. For example, saying that the people that or the miners that are not signaling BIP-110 are causing a fork, which is not true at all. Like the nodes that are not involving, the fact that everybody that is not going to do it is going to get sued because of all these things in the chain, right? It's just like these arguments that, looking from the outside, yeah, make me, like you're saying, it makes me very sad, because something happened inside of him that I don't think there is rationality, or there's not a lot of rationality anymore. And that, yeah, and unfortunately, it drags other people with them. And you have this, really, this big 110, like, mob almost on Twitter that just, because he is so active, everybody else becomes active. And it, yeah, it's just like a very angry shouting match. And I think that's very bad.
And right, I think going back to like messaging and figuring out the root cause of things and why this happened in the first place, maybe some of it should be like, what happened there that he was forced out? I don't know. And I feel like there should be a level of respect there for all the work he's done for Bitcoin and everything. But yeah, like, what was it that happened? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know the story, but I feel like maybe it should be like a Core/Luke like moderation session. Team that should come back and be like, what's up, guys? Like, let's have a talk. Like, what happened here? Why did it happen in the first place? What's going on? Like, maybe it shouldn't have gone down like that. But that's where I feel like another root cause that stemmed to another thing.
Yep.
You know, it was like just this buildup sort of happened. And I do think that, yeah, it's like maybe it's something that I'm missing. Maybe I don't know the whole story on that, but I respect you and thank you for answering the way you know and what happened and being honest. And again, we're not trying to disrespect anybody. Shit happens. You know, people fight, people get into arguments. There's a lot of misalignment. There's a lot of miscommunication. There's a lot of ego here and there too, which I would hope that in Bitcoin we drop the ego and we just learn to find that common ground and, you know, get along together, because it's what's best for Bitcoin. So I think if that is something where we should have like a little sit down between, you know what I mean? Like, almost like, let's figure this out. Let's go back to the beginning. But like, but that's where I think it is, you know? And I think that we have a way to, at least, instead of just believing, you know, they're wrong, there obviously was some miscommunication as far as how it was presented and what people believed was going on and currently is going on and how this will go down. Because I think a lot of people don't know how it'll go down. They're just kind of waiting on the sidelines, trying to figure it out and just mining whichever or using whichever node they think they should use. And it's just, I like to know. I don't like to just wait around. I'm getting tired of waiting around, hearing what's next with the node wars and what's going on. You know, I kind of want to have a way, and I wanted to give people a way. So thank you to be able to watch it play out, watch the flag day come about, watch the fireworks show, see who's signaling, see who's not signaling, be able to, because transparency is what Bitcoiners love. We want to see it. We want to see what's going on. We want to see who's signaling what. And maybe it'll work, maybe it won't, but we just want to watch. And I do feel like there was definitely some miscommunication throughout the whole thing. And I think Luke is a very smart individual, very intelligent, very good at what he does. And also can rally a community. So I think that it's kind of like to go against that is not great. And maybe there should be some talks. So I don't know.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think, right, in the long sense of Bitcoin, yeah, this is very much a nothing burger. Sorry to say that, but like, right, I don't think in 5 years we're going to look at back at this like some of these other hard forks that happened that today are already dead or just like hanging on a thread. So that's... But on the other side, right, I think it's also exciting because we haven't had chain split in a very long time. So it's something you could tell to your grandchildren.
Yeah.
When I was alive, I was like so yeah. That's how I look at it. I agree with you, right, that unfortunately it creates a lot of pain. It creates a lot of anxiety, a lot of things for people. But that's what I'm trying to do is just saying, like, look, at least how I see it right now. And maybe we need to do another one in 2 weeks if something massively happened, right? If some of the big economical notes comes out and suddenly says, oh, we're going to do over there. I don't think that's the case. But and I'm happy to do another one if something like that happens. But in the current situation, this is really, from a purely technical point of view, this is going to be a nothing burger. From a people point of view, yes, it is a big discussion, but I also think as a community that is important, right? That's how we grow. That's how we learn. That's how we become better. I hope we do become better out of it, that there is a time that we all reflect and saying, okay, there's all this shouting, all this pain, all this bloodshed online happened. How can we learn from it? Right. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen a lot. So I think I really like that you bring this up, that we need to use this also as a learning opportunity. And I think, at least in my world, I'm using it as that. And so that's how we become stronger as a community. That's how decentralized systems work. Like, you fight it out, unfortunately. And that's one of the fights. I just hope that people don't get dragged too deep into it, that they then feel like specifically in the BIB 1010, that then these people think they're not welcome anymore.
Right.
If they come back. Right. So I think that would be very bad because they tried something. It's honorable to try something. Right. That's how Bitcoin was made. That's why the soft and hard fork and the chain splits exist, to fight it out. That's what is meant. So Satoshi built the system. Like you said, it was built with the game theory in mind to fight it out.
And if more miners signal and people and 1010 works and people go over that way, then the core people, you know what I mean? Same thing, either way, you know,
Bitcoin is going to continue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why this is a great episode, that it will, you know, hopefully ease some people's minds, you know, knowing, being able to see through, see the minor signaling, see what's going on, instead of just, it's literally just being able to have some more information instead of just hearing people fight. You know what I mean? That's all it kind of feels like. So at least, you know, this gives people some tools to be able to pass the time and watch it and talk about it a little bit, you know, and be able to watch it play out, because it is an exciting time. You're right. We're living through a part of history, and maybe it'll end up being something forgotten in like a couple years. It'll be like, oh, I don't remember that happening. But right now it feels like a big deal, but at least this feels, I feel more at ease. So thank you.
Good.
This was a great conversation. So I really appreciate you joining me. And maybe next time we can, if there's a development, we can be back on talking about that. Slash, I also wouldn't mind having another conversation if you're very much aware with the decentralization of the nodes and doing many implementations of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually one of the things we need. Yes.
You do? Okay. I think that's a fascinating conversation. And I love talking about, you know, because of different reasons, how that could reduce the arguing and the fighting in the future going forward with a decentralized node, you know, implementations of varying amounts. So I think that that would be an interesting conversation for the future too. But thank you so much again for joining me.
Was glad to be here. Thanks for having me. And I hope, like you said, that more people can sleep better now that they're informed what's happening. And bring out your popcorn. It's going to be fun.
Yes. Thank you so much, Michael.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Have a good day. Thank you.